Those are all the questions that I have right now, Mr. President.
Thank you. I just wanted to follow up with what the mayor had mentioned about the issue of the arbitration and the ruling. I was on the council at the time. I voted for the ordinance that said all new firefighters would go into fire pension two, tier two. I was here for the argument of, at that time, the head of the collective bargaining unit for the firefighters that said that they didn't believe in that, that they wanted to go into fire one. Mayor Avedisian was the mayor at the time. That went into law. And then there was a negotiation and a contract was passed, not once but twice. And for some reason, this agreement was stuck in a desk drawer someplace for a year and didn't come out until after the second contract was ratified and yada, 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 as they say. I know that laws come before contracts provisions. You cannot enter into a contract that violates a law. How, and I realize it was the previous administration, and I realize that certain provisions were negotiated. I believe that arbitration decision is wrong. I believe it's wrong under state law. But it still gets us back to what the mayor was saying, which is it shouldn't be there. And it shouldn't be on the back of the taxpayers. And as the mayor pointed out, $24,533,567 for 212 firefighters, not including OPEB. And there were a lot of people that weren't here last night when we discussed OPEB. But since you're here now listening, I can't imagine if I was in one of these collective bargaining units that I wouldn't be very, very concerned. Our OPEB costs increased and anybody that wants to read these reports, let me know. I'll email them to you. We went from about $24 million annual required contribution to $35 million in 1 year. Up close to 33%. As they say, be careful what you wish for, you're going to get it. And you can take pot shots at me or anybody else for reading what's provided to us by outside third parties. These folks aren't going to have a retirement. I just wonder when that happens, if I'll get a phone call, you know, a few years from now, or maybe be many years from now, and saying, I apologize, I wished I had listened to you. I wish I had listened to you, because now I'm retired, and, you know, if you want to go see Bob Flanders, he's the last guy that fixed some of these problems in other cities and towns. These issues, as the mayor's pointing out, need to come to the bargaining table. They need to be addressed. Our books are open. I hear that too. Well, open your books. Here they are. Here's the reports. What are you talking about, open? Who's hiding what? The benefits aren't sustainable. They're not going to be there. Go get your own actuary if you don't believe us. Go calculate the numbers yourself. If I was in these collective bargaining groups, I'd be very, very concerned. Because you're putting money aside and you're working hard and you're going to want to rely on these benefits someday. They're not going to be there. They're not going to be there. They're increasing millions of dollars every year. $35 million ARC payment due this year. Can somebody show me where that is in this budget? It's an annual required contribution. And you wonder why the mayor had a State of the City address pointing this out in February. All these numbers. Instead, you get votes from groups saying, oh, well, I'm not getting an increase. You're not going to get anything. And it's not going to be me, from me or anybody else that's here. It's going to be from somebody else that's going to solve the problem. This is a math problem. This isn't a political issue. It's a simple math problem. Just like when you go to your accountant and you have to pay your taxes. This isn't about personalities or who likes who better or who gets treated better by who. These are the numbers. And it's just shocking to me that more people out there aren't realizing and listening to what the administration's saying and what people have been saying for years. And I sorry I went off on a tangent, Mr. Mayor, and the fire department, but I, you know, when people aren't here late in the evening, when we reach all these issues and they don't hear these numbers, it just doesn't benefit anybody, because we need to address these issues. They're significant issues. You need the help of the collective bargaining units. And I think that that's the message that the mayor is trying to get across tonight. And I can't express my frustration any more than I just did. But please, take the time to read this stuff. Just read it. Unless you don't want a retirement. And there's friends that I know that in the audience that are in these groups. Why would anybody put, you know, look at this and not take this seriously and not address these issues? Thank you. Was there other questions from council members? I know Councilman Ricks.
Well, first, I have to concur with the council president that we have to solve these problems before it gets to the point where we can't solve them. We can't let these issues just continue to go by year after year and then eventually get to a point where it's out of our hands and drastic cuts are made without us having input. The actuaries are telling us that we are, quote, past the point of no return. And what that means, that as scary as that is the technical language that they use. What it means is that if we allocated, rather first, if we had a maximum tax increase every single year of 4%, and if we magically didn't have to pay the increased tipping fees or all of these other items that are going up year after year that are outside of our control, and if we did not give anyone any raises whatsoever, period, and we took all of that money from a maximum tax increase every single year and put it into that one item, that one category of funding the other post-employment benefits, we still wouldn't be able to fund it. And so there have to be changes made, because if we don't make the changes at some point in the near future, then the changes are going to be made for us, and that would be just incredibly ugly, and nobody who is working right now and then retires wants the rug pulled out from under them in their retirement. That we've already seen that happen other places in the state, such as Central Falls and around the country, and we can't have that. But to return to the budget immediately in front of us, I wanted to re-examine line item 35-335, medical examinations. I see that for fiscal year 2018, there was only $10 spent, and for most of the current fiscal year, there were not these expenditures either. So my first question on that was, were the various personnel, for example, on the hazmat team or other firefighters, were they in fact receiving these types of examinations that are required by the NFPA regulations?
So, and there was no bid in place, Councilman, in 2018. So they were unable to have the exams completed at that time.
Did that have any consequences in terms of, well, I suppose any type of certification consequences or otherwise?
Yes, Councilman. That's when, after a little over a year, Rhode Island EMA notified the mayor that we risked losing that state funding along with the equipment that they had purchased and we were using if we did not have the exams completed right away. So, that was the risk that we faced if we did not get these exams completed.
Thank you. And my next question, now, by no means am I an expert in billing codes in general or CPT codes. I have some familiarity with it from my day job where I've been involved in negotiating with insurance companies and with treatment providers, demand letters and the like, as to whether certain providers or insurers are required to reimburse at certain rates for certain CPT codes. And it strikes me, thinking about this issue, do we have an expert in medical billing who has reached out or otherwise sent an inquiry or a demand letter or any type of correspondence like that to Blue Cross that clarifies that we have this list of different tests and examinations that we as the city are requiring our city employees, firefighters, to undergo and demanding that Blue Cross therefore take care of it as part of their standard health insurance?
Yes, Councilman, we do have correspondence from Blue Cross over a period of time, going back 3 or 4 years, the most recent being this year as well, where the question was posed to them in regards to these exams, and they, on all of those occasions, informed us that that is not part of the medical coverage, and they would not be covering that for the city.
Aside from Cranston, have you taken a look at other municipalities to see if there are any other municipalities where Blue Cross may have been willing to cover this expense?
I have not conducted an analysis of many departments other than I am aware, though, in Providence, this was also a budgeted item where it was not covered by Blue Cross in that city as well.
Thank you. I think that certainly having looked at Providence, at Cranston, and certainly having that back and forth with Blue Cross, I think that that is certainly performing your due diligence on that item. I would just say that perhaps, and this is, I want to be clear, a matter of going above and beyond just due diligence. If there's any way to just keep pushing on Blue Cross, certainly every dollar counts, and $70,000 goes pretty far. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Chief, I want to kind of just bounce off what Councilman Ricks started on. You say that the 38 members of the HAZMAT are required to get this, and maybe I'm mixing the two, but I did double check to see if there was any other line item. I was informed by a previous chief that it was voluntary and that members did not have to use it, or I should say some members didn't want to use it on the city dime because then it would have, whatever was found would have to be disclosed to the city. So I'm just, first of all, I appreciate you saying that because it is something that we discussed in this council chamber, that we're making an investment on something or we're paying for something that is not being utilized. And that was that started the discussion of, well, then why are we paying for this? Then if they can go, if they have health insurance, which we pay for, they can go get it. So I'm encouraged to hear that you're saying that under your department it is mandatory. I was encouraged to hear the chairman start off the conversation, and I'm encouraged to hear that it's something that seems to be that moving forward that the fire that the members are protected, but also we're being preventative, and to me that seems important. So I had to say that, and I'm glad that especially members on HAZMAT are going to be the ones, you know, that it's mandatory. And then you also mentioned that there were many subcategories that it's also mandatory. So I appreciate that and thank you. I have another question, follow up on line item 35261, which is the clothing allowance. I'm curious on just something. Is that a yearly stipend, a quarterly stipend? How is that paid? And what is the average amount per firefighter?
So per the collective bargaining agreement, those payments are made. $450 in clothing maintenance is paid out in October, and $1,000 is paid out in March of each year. So that's a total of $1,450 per firefighter per year. You multiply that by the 190 guys, it's $275.5.
So does that cover? So let's say if a firefighter, after he gets that stipend, or after the firefighter gets that stipend, after the firefighter gets that stipend, does the, and let's say a clothing rips, do they submit for another replacement of clothing, or if something happens, or does that cover their clothing for the entire year? So if they ruined, or if they, I would even dare to say, because I want a full disclosure, if a firefighter, let's say, puts on weight or something and they have to get all new uniform, does that cover it if they have to replace, or can they submit a receipt and get a full reimbursement?
No. So normal wear and tear and size and issues would be covered under their allowance for the uniforms. That's why we give them a stipend to buy uniforms every year. That's normal wear and tear. If damage is done to their uniform in the performance of their duties, so they're at a fire or an EMS incident and they get blood all over their uniform that can't be cleaned or repaired, mm-hmm. then that would be taken out of the uniform budget, which is that newly created one you see just above it, which is 35260.
And these are contractually obligated?
We are obligated to replace uniforms that are damaged in the line in the performance of their duties, yes.
And the reason why I ask that is, in the United States military, there's, I don't know if you're aware of this, when you're issued your original uniform, when you go through basic and you can be 17 years old, 18 years old, 19, that is your standard issued uniform. That stays with you for your career. If anything is destroyed, you get a yearly, it's called a, I think it's 30%. And then the military member is required to pay. So in the United States military now, in the Army, they're transitioning from the dress blues to the pink and greens, which is the traditional World War II uniform. And the big discussion right now is the cost that it's going to cost those military members to pay for that to meet the standards of uniform services. So it's something to discuss, definitely something to, you know, to look at as a something when we talk about moving forward as a department and coming up with new ideas of what to look at. But the final question, so the uniforms, what is the average cost of a uniform and what uniforms does it cover? Does it cover the standard blue dress uniform or not blue dress, I apologize. Does it cover the I guess the detail uniform or the daily uniform and does it cover the dress uniform?
Are we talking specifically about the clothing allowance that's paid to them by the contract?
Yes, I apologize. Yes, I'm talking about the line item for clothing allowance, yes.
That is for their Class B uniforms, which are similar to the ones that me and the chief are wearing right now.
Okay.
The difference on the firefighter side is they actually have a higher grade uniform. They're Nomex, okay, as opposed to the polyester ones that we get to wear. Uh-huh. So they are expensive. I would say they run in the range of $400 a set. Mm-hmm. Of pants and shirt, and they need multiple sets, obviously. If they're working 4 days in a row, they can't continue to wear the same set. And they do wear out pretty fast, especially when you're wearing them underneath the protective gear.
Excellent. And what about the detailed uniforms, let's say, the dress blues, I would call them?
Right. So that would initially, a new member of the department is responsible for buying their own dress uniforms. That's not covered under the contract or the fire department rules and regulations. If we promote somebody to a new position and they require a new dress uniform, then I believe by the contract that we're required to buy them a new uniform, a new dress uniform, and that would be covered under that 35-260 clothing allowance. And that's the bid that we actually just came to you for in the last council meeting.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Is there any other questions from council members? Councilman Corley.
Last night I was listening when we had the discussion concerning our future economic outlook, and the jump that we have to go to make the payments for all of the benefits that go along with everyone's pension that are in collective bargaining agreements has exploded, as the president has said. And we can't afford to keep on going the way we have been going. Our benefits have become too expensive for the taxpayers to bear. When we received the arbitration ruling that said that there was another $2.6 million that was supposed to be awarded to Tier 2, I heard the head of the union say, we don't want the taxpayers to have to bear this. We understand. The only people that are going to pay are the taxpayers. That is where we get the money to pay all of these bills. And someone said, well, how do we deal with it? I said, well, the only way to deal with it is we have to sit down with all of the people that work for the city and show them exactly what we have coming in and what it is that is going out. And the fire contract is probably the most expensive contract we have per employee. I suggested last night that we should go back to the drawing board and draw up a city contract for everyone who works for the city should have the same type of benefits outside of their salary. There should be uniform vacation time. There should be uniform holiday time. There should be uniform sick time, because everyone's working for the city. I appreciate everything that the fire department does. I appreciate everything that the people that plow the streets do. I appreciate everyone working in this building to make sure that the city can run. They are all important, and they all serve the city. However, most of the people that work in this city do not get the sick time payments that the fire department receives. They do not get paid for holidays that are not taken. They don't have four holidays that they can bank and get paid for at the end of their career or later on in their career at a different rate. Other people that work in the city have to pay their own tuition if they want to go to school. The teachers have to contribute to the substitute teachers that come in and teach when they are out sick. These are very expensive benefits, and it may be that the only way to deal with it is to go back and start all over again. It could be that the rank and file of the fire department may rue the day when they decided not to accept the offer that was made when they were negotiating with the mayor, and which the negotiating team suggested would be in their best interest. I heard that they had not received a increase in 6 years, I went back and I looked at the per year spending for the firefighters, and with all of their accumulated benefits, they have had an increase every single year during those 6 years. And all of that is paid for by the taxpayers. The only way to stop the snowball that has continued to roll down the mountain and is now coming into the city and is going to wreak havoc is to have the people that work for the city come to the table and understand that the well has run dry. The majority of the people that work for the fire department don't even live in the city. So that I don't know what the geographical placement of each member of the fire department is. I don't know if in their towns they have the same exact problem that we have, but they are not contributing to the tax base in Warwick. They are simply receiving their salary, their lifetime benefits, their lifetime health care, and all at the expense of the Warwick taxpayers. This is not going to be able to continue. It's the next contract before us, so it is the one that is first for us to have to deal with. And the only way that I see that we can deal with it is to go back to the drawing board and go back to square one and try to treat everyone who works for the city on an equal basis.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this? Councilman McElroy, did you have your hand up?
Chief, I have a question on the annual medical exams.
You have to speak into the mic. Put it close to your mouth.
Chief, I have a question on the annual medical exams. Are they out to bid now? You have a contract now?
No, a bid was not awarded. They did go out to bid last year, but no bid was ever awarded.
Okay. So what happens now? A fighter just go wherever he wants to get the exam?
We would go out to bid again for it.
What has been the procedure for the past year?
Yes, Councilman, when we were informed by the state that we were going to be shut down, our hazmat crew, I signed a 3-3, which was an emergency order for, I don't know the exact amount, I think it was 10,000 or something of that nature, 14,000, to get our hazmat team examined so that we would be able to service the residents and businesses of our community. Otherwise, we were told we would have to call Cranston or one of the other communities to come in and do it.
Did we pick the provider to do these exams?
Yes, we did.
Okay. One other question. What's the city's procedure on the rescue service billing?
I'll let Chief Woman Howard speak to that.
What specific question do you have on rescue billing?
What I'm mainly concerned with is in, say, picking which hospital to go to, and especially the elderly, if they have to go to the VA or to a specific hospital where the doctor has privileges, what's the procedure on, you know, that patient being billed?
So the department has a policy on that that's been in place for several years, at least the 5 years that I was the chief of EMS. I can forward you a copy of that policy. It's based on several things, one of which is patient condition, the other of which is hospitals that are open or closed at the time, because there's a lot of diversions that go on between hospitals as they get overcrowded. Local protocol, so Rhode Island state protocol, actually directs us to certain hospitals and not to others, weather conditions, family requests, physician requests. Okay. All those things go into play when the rescue officers make a decision based on what hospital he needs
to
go to.
Thank you. If you could forward that to me, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Any other questions from council members? Any questions from members of the public? Just identify yourself for the record.
Rob Cody, Ward 7. I have a number of questions, but medical exams, I just want to bring it to your attention. It was I who brought it to this council's attention that 7 years ago, the provision in the line item 35-335 was stricken from the contract. Not only was it stricken from the contract, a fiscal note was written showing that over the last 10 years, the average allocation on 35-335 was $58,000 a year. And that fiscal note 63-15A indicated a savings of $58,000 a year for 3 years for a total of $174,000. Unfortunately, a week later, they funded the line item. Now, traditionally, the line item has never been used. $324,000, very little of that money has ever been used. And we did find the transfer resolutions, and those monies were transferred back into the general fund and then came back into the line item of overtime. So we also had a legal opinion. After I brought this to your attention, we had a legal opinion Mr. Harrington wrote that stated that, in fact, the city had no obligation to fund that line item. So the assistant chief just said...
So let's just correct the record here, if John could correct it.
The history of this is that, and I have the opinion with me, is that there was a requirement in the collective bargaining agreement going back from 2009 to 2012 that an employee of the fire department who is 45 years or older may request a complete yearly physical exam by a doctor. And the language said that the cost of such examination and test shall be paid by the city. So it was a physical exam which the employee over age 45 could request to have it and have the city pay for it. The line that said the cost of such examination and test shall be paid by the city was deleted in the following contract starting in 2013. the fiscal note that accompanied it, and there was no no identification of line items or anything like that, but the fiscal note that accompanied that contract said that their medical exam provision would generate a savings of $58,000. So the implication is that that voluntary exam being with the cost being deleted from the contract would save the city $58,000. What the chief testified to tonight is that there's a physical examination required by state EMA, and that's why they've refunded that line item. It's a different type of medical examination and not the one that was, the cost was removed from the contract.
So if you do recall during that conversation, then Chief Fontenot came before us, and even Chief McLaughlin said, well, we need those monies because when we bring on new recruits, we have to give them medical exams. But the verbiage in the contract was contrary to how the money was being spent and also how the how it was portrayed to the taxpayer, how it was being spent. So it seems to me if it's not in the collective bargaining agreement, just as we can't unilaterally go out and remove things from the collective bargaining agreement, we should not also be able to unilaterally put things back into the collective bargaining agreement. And I would just like to know, was there anyone specific from Rhode Island EMA that notified you of the possible loss of funding if we didn't do this?
There was correspondence with several members of REMA. I don't have their names offhand, but I can provide them to you.
And you got that in a written form, that letter?
It was a letter sent to the mayor, yes.
Okay, thank you. Mayor, you said that they're taking steps now to monitor things like sick time, vacation, and change of shift that... through a new computer system, possibly, that we're looking into that?
We're not only looking into it. The city council passed it, I think, at the last meeting or the meeting before. So we've embarked. That boat has left the port, and it's going to be utilized not just in fire but also police. It will be documenting sick time, vacation time, payroll. It would make it more easily... reportable to the payroll authorities. It would also make records a lot more accessible with a push of a button. In fact, if you're going to be around a little longer, I think MIS is on for tonight, and he will be able to tell you more about.
So like the form of a time clock or something, a fingerprint time clock?
I know they use that in Middletown. No. This is something about record keeping. This takes you from the paper and pencil, so to speak, to the 21st century of high tech. And this program is not just... This program is utilized in other places. And it's a great program. It's a great price. I think that... just the errors and miscalculations that can be prevented far exceed the cost of the implementation of this for both police and fire.
I agree.
And what we plan on doing, as we plan on integrating municipal into something like that. We want to bring, there's a lot of new technological features out there, options out there. And I think it's time to bring us into the 21st century.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have to have traceability. And in fact, I was speaking with the controller of the Middletown Fire Department, who was telling me that they have a system in place. It's a fingerprint time card. They come in, they push their fingerprint, and automatically downloads into the payroll system and everything else. And in fact, she was telling me it's antiquated, that they're now going to an iris scan system.
Really?
But it all goes right through the payroll system. There's none of this hand calculations and mathematics by hand. So, I mean, we need to step up into the 20th century. A couple things about the uniform allowances. I mean, this really irks me because we all know that it's not spent on uniforms. right? It's deferred compensation, and the council and previous councils have talked about that. So in the last contract, we paid out $1,035,000 in uniform allowances, and not one penny of that is traceable to anybody. Not one penny. Okay? So, and to Mr. Howe's point, if you were to go to page 22 and page 23 of the contract, there's several stipulations that actually indicate that the employee does not come out of pocket at all for uniforms. He's issued turnout gear, he's issued his dress gear, he's issued his everyday gear, and it even states so far as any equipment, personal equipment that's damaged is replaced, any uniforms that are damaged are replaced. If they need additional uniforms, it'll be borne at the cost of the city. So why are we giving them $1,450 for uniform allowance and maintenance? It doesn't make sense. It's a big, big number that's not tracked. So if you want to do that, you hire a uniform vendor, and if the man rips his khakis, he goes to the uniform vendor, he drops off his pair of ripped khakis, he picks up another pair, and at the end of the month, they bill the city. Right? You got no traceability on $1 million line item. I'm baffled at that. So when we talk about tightening our purse strings, and this should be the model to tighten the purse strings. That money is deferred compensation. And by the way, and so in, as I said, in the last contract, it was $1,035,000 in the fire department. It was $772,000 in the police department. So you're looking at almost $2 million. So when the city's in a pinch like this, let's take the $2 million and let's hire a vendor so we can have traceability of the money. It only makes common business sense. So we need to really think about that. So I guess change of shift was tracked with the Form 109. Are we still tracking change of shift with the Form 109?
We use the Form 109 as a worksheet in order to enter change of shifts into the records management system.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
We use the 109 form as a worksheet so the battalion chiefs can enter it into our record management system, FD Manager.
Okay, are you saving that Form 109?
We save them for a month and then we destroy them with a records of destruction.
Okay, so how do you keep track that a change of shift is a mutual exchange of time? So if I have a change of shift with another man, what documents are you keeping or what files are you keeping to make sure that that man pays back the other man?
I mean, change of shifts aren't in the budget. It has nothing to do with the budget. Do you want me to keep answering questions? Bob?
Software. Yeah. Hi, Rob. The CrewSense software will take care of some of those issues that, you know, you had raised about how it's the forms brought in and then downloaded into the records management system. This system is nothing like what was here before. It is 21st century software that is directly downloaded to a database, easily transferable, and what you're saying is tracking to see whether or not that shift, change of shift, had been compensated for. And that's why the mayor, when he began on this journey, really wanted that perfect software that could track, more importantly, be transparent. But the other advantage is there's efficiency in processing the data. How many boxes did you go through going through? You know, taking one box, taking forms out, collating them, and going forward. That no longer will be the case. It will be queries that are in a modern day system that's easily accessible. So I can only speak to going forward. The windshield is a lot bigger than the rearview mirror. The mayor believes that. The mayor learns from the mistakes. The information that's brought forth, the mayor said early on, you have big ears, we listen. And when there's changes to be had, this council has been accepting. They were here, it was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, accepting the CrewSense. We had a PowerPoint presentation showing the boxes of forms and how the new productivity software will help in management solutions. So I'm hoping, and the mayor is hoping, that as we move forward, we'll go forward with municipal and we correct some of these issues that may have come up in the past. And that's all I can really say about that.
And the only reason I ask that, Bill, is that the data that we had in front of us for last year showed numerous men that took anywhere from 18 to 27 changes a shift in the course of the year and paid back one or two. So it wasn't a mutually balanced situation, and there's been other departments in New England that have gotten into a lot of trouble because of that. So I was just concerned that we're addressing that issue. I personally don't believe in the change of shift, especially when I found out that people were using the change of shift to play baseball, that, you know, what's your priority, coming to work or going to play softball? So I hope that changes in the future. In terms of unused sick pay, does any members of the administration or the department know present day, how many days of unused sick time, which is one of the line items in the budget, are actually in the bank right now? Do we have an estimate on how much the department has tucked away in that little nest egg?
We did not bring those numbers with us.
Can't hear you.
We did not bring those numbers with us.
Okay. Well, I did. So presently right now...
There is a reflection, though. There is a reflection in line item 35-116 that has been decreased 23.19% in this year's budget.
Right, that was the expenditure of the unused sick time.
That was decreased 23.19%.
Right. So what I'm asking is the amount of days that have actually been stored in the bank that are a liability in the future. And based upon the unused sick pay reports that I received, as of February 1st, there are presently 25,223.65 sick days in the bank. There's a liability associated with that that's not tracked anywhere, because eventually those sick days will get cashed out. In 2018 dollars, as of today, that liability is $10,363,523. That's a liability that is not being tracked anywhere. Eventually it's going to come and bite us, because sooner or later we have to pay that out. Whether it's paid out this year, next year, or over subsequent years, that number is increasing. 2 years ago, it was 22,510. Last year, it was 22,785. And now it's 25,223. It's a big, big number. And these numbers I'm giving you are directly from city documents that I've gotten through the APRA request. Yeah.
And I'm hoping with this new computer data system, payroll, keeping track of things, that this will alleviate any room for any error and make that data a lot more transparent and accessible.
And I agree. And it leads me to the point that there's sometimes when a municipality is in trouble financially, where you have to look at certain benefits and say, okay, you know, this is a really, really generous benefit, but the benefit is actually so generous that it's hurting us and it's putting a liability on us. And it's my opinion that the amount of sick days that we offer are so overly generous that it's building this future liability that, as Councilman Morolla said, is going to add to the destructive forces that eventually these pensions and these future payments aren't going to be there. In terms of sick days, I have the sick day report. So in 2018, we used 1,410 sick days. That's a lot of sick time, right? That's a lot of sick time for a department that these guys are supposed to be really healthy. So I just can't fathom the fact of that amount of sick days. In the 2016, it was 1,215. It's going up. We have less men, and it's going up. But what I did an analysis based upon the record of sick time sheets that I received a couple of weeks ago. And I understand, Mayor, that to your credit, with this, the unused sick pay finagling that was going on, that residual addition of the 0.41 that was added. You stopped that at the end of May. So what I did was I took a look at from January to June, we had X amount of sick days. From June until December, the sick days doubled. They doubled, which drove overtime. So the appearance of it, based upon the city documents, Mayor Solomon came in and he stopped, he righted the wrong, that mathematical equation that was being manipulated, he fixed that. Immediately upon fixing that, we started to see a doubling of the amount of sick days that were taken that drives overtime. Those are factual mathematical numbers, and I have them on a spreadsheet that I'd be more than happy to supply to you. But it just looked a little strange when you graph this stuff out, that you had X amount of sick days, and then right after June, bang, they just skyrocketed. So I think that's something maybe that
we'll take a look at that.
The team can take a look at. Oh, question. Does the fire department have any like open type of charge accounts, credit accounts within hardware stores or things of that in the city where they can just walk in and purchase stuff? And if so, what would those vendors be?
Well, they have to get permission before they'd be able to walk in and make a purchase.
So when you say they get permission, do they get a requisition, a piece of paper, a slip, or...
Yes, they'd get a piece of paper from my office.
Okay. The reason I asked that was last week I happened to be buying some marine supplies at Salt's, and firefighter walked in and bought 3 bottles of wax and 2 throwable life preservers and went up to the counter. He was right in front of me, and he said, yeah, put it on the Warwick Fire Department charge, and he actually read off the numbers, which I know what the numbers are now. He did not give him any piece of paper. There was no card. There was nothing. Got out, got into ladder 3, and drove off with 3 bottles of wax and 2 throwable life preservers. The reason I asked that question is we all know what happened with the school department, right? So who has access to this account? Who knows the numbers? He knew the numbers. I think it was seven digits. I don't want to read the numbers, but I have the numbers. So what prevents anybody from walking into a facility like that? And I'm not accusing anybody. I'm saying, what is the preventiveness? Because we had issues in the past. We had a city worker doing that.
If you could provide us that information, I don't think they're prepared to answer that question, okay. But I think it's a fair
great.
Question.
I just wanted to bring it to your attention. So I'll end on my pet peeve. When we're in a critical state of finances, we should not be taking $500,000 rig to go to the market, period. End of story. It's plenty of time to bring your food. We provide you with Sub-Zero refrigerators and freezers and dishwashers and knives and forks and everything else. Pick up your food and bring it to work. Because the fact of the matter is it's multiple trips per day per firehouse, and it all adds up, right? A couple of weeks ago, I was at the mall, and a fire truck came in, dropped a guy off at the Cox Cable store. I spoke to the chief about it, went in and paid the cable bill, taking $500,000 rig. It's wear and tear, and it's unnecessary, and the optics of it are not good. So I just think, you know, when I hear members of the council and the administration say, hey, we all got to pitch in, right? Well, we do, because... the taxpayer is the one that's, you know, the primary funding formula for this. And, you know, from a business point of view, as an owner of a small business, when things get tight, you have to look at all aspects because everything adds up. And, you know, as an analogy, I said this before to the General Assembly, they're trying to fix all these problems in the state of Rhode Island. But you can't put a trash barrel on the beach. So these are the little things. If you can't mitigate little things like this that are causing expenses to the taxpayer, how are we going to get over the hurdles? And, you know, everything affects us, and I'm sure you guys have been privy to this afternoon the news that broke that, unfortunately, that pension money that was going to be moved from the school department has been deemed to be illegal, and it was just broken on the Boston Globe.
That, we can address that later as far as the school department. I'm aware of that. I know that we had discussions about that the other night. We're trying to get through this budget, so if you have, I understand you made a lot of points on this budget. If there's anything else you'd like to say on this budget.
No, I think that's about it. It's just, for the last 10 years I've been coming here, I've heard the same complaints or concerns from the council that we're going to take all these measures, and the fire department budget goes up and up and up and up and up, and it never levels off. It never levels off. And frankly, after what we found with, you know, all these grievances that we have now that are based upon some contract language manipulation, the unused sick time, it's not even that there's no penalties, it's that it doesn't seem that behavior has changed in terms of the expenditures that are taking place in the department. And at the end of the day, it's the taxpayers that pay for it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other members of the public?
John Seminole, Ward 6. Just to start, I want to say congratulations to the new chief. I've already spoken to him a couple of times. I'm not anti-firefighter. My brother's a retired firefighter who worked with this chief. My nephew still is in Providence that worked with this chief. So I'm not anti-firefighter. I want that right out there. All I do is say what I got to say based on my opinion. You take it or you don't take it. But I just want to bring one example quickly. On, I believe it was May 17th, about 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm doing my daily reading of the journal pamphlet and my coffee, and I hear a dispatch go out from police, Animal Control Officer 1. I sent it to the mayor, then I talked to the chief later. The lady that was the Animal Control Officer for the police says, there's a dog on a roof, one dog on a roof. The roof's about 20 feet high. I can give you the number, 415 Oakland Beach Avenue. So I just need a ladder that can get the 20 feet high roof to get this dog. 2 seconds later, or a minute later, say give it a minute, probably less than that, the fire department dispatches engine 3, engine 4, ladder 3. And my head's spinning, like, wait a minute, this sworn employee of the police department's requesting one ladder. And we're dispatching 2 engines and a ladder truck. Makes no sense to me. I called the chief's office after I texted the mayor and didn't get a response. I immediately called, because I know he's busy, but I like him to know that I stay in touch. So I called the fire department administration, which I've never done before. I get the chief's office, didn't get her name. A woman answers the phone. I tell her the situation. I say, I just need to talk to somebody about something's wrong here. And I'm sure it happens more than once. This is just the latest example. The lady takes my name, takes my number, while she's laughing at me on the phone. I said, well, you know, I'm not expecting it, you know, based on my previous experiences with the Warwick Fire Department administration, the old one, not this one, so far. She goes, okay, I'll give them the information, but I wouldn't expect a call. To the chief's credit, within an hour, maybe an hour and a half, correct me if I'm wrong, chief, I get a call from the chief. Never talked to him before, didn't even know who he was. I thought it was somebody pulling my leg at first, you know? But it was the chief returning my call as a gentleman, and we had a gentleman's contact, conversation about it. And I told him that the woman that laughed at me the whole time needed to be spoken to, because that's like calling somebody an a-hole. I mean, it's just something that shouldn't happen to a taxpayer. And He said he had spoken to her. I confirmed that. But it just the attitude that she tried to explain it away, saying that the state requires certain fire department protocols. And I tried to say to her, listen, I'm an ex-police officer. I know all about protocols, okay? I find it hard to believe that a state protocol dictates that if a police officer or a animal control officer requests 120-foot ladder, that we dispatch two engines in a engine truck.
So
a ladder truck.
I think I get the gist of your story.
Okay.
And I think that we need to kind of move this along. And
it's on there under gas.
So
Listen.
We're going to take one step at a time, okay. And people are going to talk. And if people are going to laugh, I'm going to slam the gavel, and you can leave. You can leave. It's going to be a situation where people are going to respect one another, whether they disagree or not. You come to the podium, you speak. That's it. That's a civilized society. Okay. What I'm going to say to you, Mr. Seminole, is I get your point. But I have to run a meeting tonight, and I have to get down to questions about the budget, or I'm not going to get through.
It is okay. On the budget under gas and maintenance of vehicles.
I understand.
Okay? If somebody falls out of the fire truck on the way there, it brings in other matters that it costs the taxpayers. And so let's change the attitude from the top down.
I get your point. It's a point well taken.
And I'm always at Oakland Beach in the morning if they want to find me.
All right. So, thank you. Is there anybody else from the public that would like to speak? Yes, sir. Identify yourself for the record.